Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Over the past week, we have seen millions of young climate crisis activists and their supporters from around the globe take to the streets and the halls of power to demand real action. Friday's global climate strike was the biggest single-day climate protest in history. Organizers say 4 million people took to the streets in more than 1,000 cities across 185 countries. On Saturday, youth leaders convened at the United Nations in New York City for the Youth Climate Summit. And one of the speakers was Wanjuhi Ngorojui. She was raised in a village at the foot of Mount Kenya, which has faced food and water shortages for the very first time in January 2018. Her community used social media to pressure government officials to take action. Yesterday, global leaders from more than 60 countries attended the United Nations Climate Action Summit in New York City. In order to participate, governments had to promise. Now, they had to promise to take further action and cut back their country's use of fossil fuels. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told world leaders, "Don't come to the summit with beautiful speeches, come with concrete plans." According to the reports, the largest greenhouse gas emitters in the world, the United States, China, and India, offered very little or nothing at all to curb emissions. Without naming names, the 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg responded by saying, "How dare you?" And here is Greta Thunberg speaking.
My message is that we'll be watching you. This is all wrong. I shouldn't be up here. I should be back in school on the other side of the ocean. Yet you all come to us young people for hope. How dare you? You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words. And yet I'm one of the lucky ones. People are suffering. People are dying. Entire ecosystems are collapsing. We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you? For more than 30 years, the science has been crystal clear. How dare you continue to look away and come here saying that you're doing enough when the politics and solutions needed are still nowhere in sight? You say you hear us and that you understand the urgency. But no matter how sad and angry I am, I do not want to believe that. Because if you really understood the situation and still kept on failing to act, then you would be evil, and that I refuse to believe. The popular idea of cutting our emissions in half in 10 years only gives us a 50% chance of staying below 1.5 degrees and the risk of setting off irreversible chain reactions beyond human control. 50% may be acceptable to you, but those numbers do not include tipping points, most feedback loops, additional warming hidden by toxic air pollution, or the aspects of equity and climate justice. They also rely on my generation sucking hundreds of billions of tons of your CO2 out of the air with technologies that barely exist. So a 50% risk is simply not acceptable to us, we who have to live with the consequences. How dare you pretend that this can be solved with just business as usual and some technical solutions? With today's emissions levels, that remaining CO2 budget will be entirely gone within less than 8.5 years. There will not be any solutions or plans presented in line with these figures here today, because these numbers are too uncomfortable and you are still not mature enough to tell it like it is. You are failing us. But the young people are starting to understand your betrayal. The eyes of all future generations are upon you. And if you choose to fail us, I say we will never forgive you. We will not let you get away with this. Right here, right now, is where we draw the line. The world is waking up. And change is coming, whether you like it or not. Thank you.
And that was the 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg speaking at the UN Climate Action Summit in New York City. And we do have the clip that we wanted to play from Wanjuhi Njorog. She was raised in a village at the foot of Mount Kenya, which faced food and water shortages for the first time in January 2018. She spoke on Saturday, where youth leaders convened at the UN for the Youth Climate Summit. And here is her clip. Okay, we're just getting that clip ready. We're having some technical problems. Hold with us. I just wanted to play another clip because while Greta deserves so much attention, there are also many other climate crisis activists who are speaking as loud, but they're not getting as much attention. In fact, one of our guests today wrote a piece for Grist called Meet the Other Greta Thunbergs at the first ever UN Youth Climate Summit. And so we will talk about that on today's show. We're also going to talk about an unprecedented petition that was filed by 16 youth from 12 countries. It is a children versus climate change campaign to petition the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child to hold the world's leading economic powers accountable for inaction on the climate crisis. These kids submitted their lawsuit to five countries: Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, and Turkey. So the question a lot of people are asking is, why is the United States missing? Well, the youth say that every country except the United States has ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, and of those countries, 45 agreed to an additional protocol that allows children to petition the UN directly about treaty violations. And within that group of 45 nations, Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, and Turkey are pumping out some of the most pollution that causes the climate crisis. And so we'll talk about that later in the show. We do have the clip ready now from Wanjuhi Njorog.
A national ban on harvesting of forest products was enacted. The government of Kenya has since launched the Greening Kenya initiative in December 2018, aimed at achieving our desired 10% forest cover. To my fellow youth, it is evident that starting where we are and with what we have will cause a revolution. What we are asking for as young people. First, we appreciate that youth are now at the table where the discussions are being held. But our voices and our inputs must be allowed to influence these decisions.
Assuming the title of keynote listener, the UN chief was allowed to share his thoughts.
And that was Wanjuhi Njorog. She was one of the youth leaders convened at the UN in New York City for the Youth Climate Summit. Thanks to SABC Digital News for that clip. And I'm sorry about the technical issues we're having today. Joining us to talk about all of this, the strikes, the summit, and the petition, are two guests. Molly Enking is a news fellow at Grist. Her work has been featured in The Daily Beast, Wired, and others. And she joins us now from New York. Hi, Molly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're also joined by Paula Rosa Aquino, a senior environmental justice fellow at Grist. She has years of experience as a science reporter and previously worked for Gizmodo's Earther. And she joins us from New York at the UN. Hi, Paula. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, great to have both of you. Before we dive in and talk about the summit, I just want to ask you both to talk a little bit about the global climate strike on Friday. The photos are still coming in, the speeches. People say that this was the biggest single climate day protest in history. 4 million people took to the streets in more than 1,000 cities across 185 countries. Molly, what really stood out for you in this global climate strike?
Yeah, a couple things. I guess the first was just how excited everyone in New York was to see Greta speak. When she took the stage, it was seriously like a Beatles concert. People were screaming. People had been waiting, you know, 5+ hours in the hot sun to see her. People were fainting. Like, it was kind of bananas. They had to get medics into the crowd to get people out. So, yeah, I think it was much bigger than the youth activists in New York who organized ever expected it could be, and just the turnout was amazing. Another thing that stood out to me was just how focused these youth activists are. They really keep their eye on the prize no matter what's going on. Like, this was a big day of celebration for them. Again, it was record high turnout, but when I was speaking to one of the New York core organizers, she was already talking about how she's going to Chile for COP25 and how, you know, she expects to just keep pushing for the next couple of years. And she didn't really necessarily have high hopes for the UN climate summit at the time. She was like, I think we're going to see more at COP25. And it turned out she was right.
Wow. What's also interesting and really sad when you think about it is that for so many of these youth, they are experiencing firsthand this climate crisis. Like Greta Thunberg at the UN summit said she's one of the lucky ones because so many people are suffering, so many people are dying. We just talked about the massive inequality that we are seeing as a result of Hurricane Dorian. So a lot of these young people are experiencing this firsthand.
Absolutely. And I actually, Alexandra Villaseñor, who is sort of Greta Thunberg's, I guess, parallel here in New York. She's been organizing Fridays for Future for a long time now outside the UN. And she tweeted out yesterday, you know, a lot of people are talking about Greta's lawsuit, the one that you mentioned previously. And she was like, there are other youth who are signed onto this lawsuit, and they all have stories to tell as well. There are just so many stories that I heard on Friday, just a lot of these people, you know, were a lot of these youth were, you know, 9 years old, 10 years old during Hurricane Katrina. And so some of their most vivid memories of the climate crisis was experiencing that devastation firsthand and, you know, not being able to go to school, their homes or their neighborhoods being flooded and just the fear there. So it makes sense that they're angry and they're mobilizing.
Right. What about you, Paola? What stood out for you at these massive global climate strikes?
Yeah, I think what stood out for me, I'll agree with Molly, it is just the immensity of it, how powerful, and just the scope of it, how worldwide it was, right? You could see just online how different countries, people were mobilizing for this issue, which is an issue so real to them, and they're really ramped up about it.
Well, let's talk about what happened at the UN. And just to give a little bit of context, the biggest emitters, the United States, China, and India, are being heavily criticized for taking very little to no action. And so that's one important thing that really came out of these talks. I think the other thing that we need to talk about for some context is that the United States is now the biggest oil producer in the world. Under the Obama administration, production started going up. And just last year, the United States actually surpassed Saudi Arabia. So, Molly, can you talk about this at a time when there's so much action happening on the streets? You've got teenagers talking on national television about the science that we just took part in the Covering Climate Now, which was an initiative of 300 media outlets writing so many stories and doing TV and radio segments about this. At the same time, you've got the Trump administration rolling back so many environmental regulations and protections and the U.S. producing more oil than any other country in the world.
And so the U.S. Sort of staying silent on this topic has allowed, at least some are saying, other big countries like China and India to sort of just point the finger at and say, you know, at least we're upholding, we're moving towards our, we agreed that, you know, they signed on to the Paris Agreement and at least we're upholding our end of the bargain, whereas others, no one mentioned names, but it was very clear and pointed at the United States, others are not upholding their Paris Accords, and actually Trump intends to drop out of the Paris Agreement. So, you know, this was an opportunity for China to stand up and say, you know what, like, we are moving towards our goals, and potentially people thought they might commit to even more aggressive goals to phase out coal sooner, and that didn't happen. They said, you know, why should we do that when others aren't? And part of that, too, is the escalating trade war between China and the United States has China worried about its own economy, so they're less willing to potentially take a little bit of an altruistic hit to their economy to move forward on climate goals when they're sort of locked into this trade battle with President Trump.
Paola, what would you add?
I'll add that, you know, Secretary General Antonio Guterres really convened this special summit to pressure countries to ramp up their individual actions on the issue of climate change. But all in all, I think that most people will agree it's too little too late. People were hoping that perhaps today would mark a new era in climate action. But a lot of the commitments that were announced yesterday, a lot of were incremental changes, but just updates on pledges that a lot of countries have made during the landmark Paris Climate Accord. Whereas one big development was that Russia ratified the climate accord. So.
And what is the significance of that? Can you talk more about that?
Sure. It's a marked shift in rhetoric. Russia is actually the fourth largest greenhouse polluter. I will add that the targets that Russia added are incredibly low, and it'll still be able to increase emissions. But it's definitely a marked shift in how Russia behaves during these kind of policies.
And what is the enforcement mechanisms behind this? So when a country says that it'll abide by a certain rule, how is this enforced? How is it checked? What are the updates on that?
Sure. It's supposed to... Right, that's exactly the concern, right? Because they're not exactly too committed to the mainstays of the Paris Climate Accord. Their goals are somewhat loosely to achieve the Paris Climate Accords. They're mainly like a worldwide UN body is the one that enforces these kinds of accords. There's really no way to like enforce penalty, really. It's kind of we'll just have to wait and see.
How are you thinking about these issues when you look at countries like the United States, China, and India not taking action? And I was just reading from Agence France Press this morning that Saudi Arabia is blocking the adoption of a major UN report on oceans and climate change by challenging an earlier UN assessment, highlighting the need to slash emissions. And one person was quoted as saying, "It's been 24 hours. There's been no compromise from the Saudis. They are undermining the science underlying this report, and it is despicable." So what are you both hearing from youth about how these very powerful world leaders are not taking any action? I mean, the countries that emit the most are really blocking progress. What are you hearing from young people about that, Molly?
Sure. I mean, I think that is sort of the disconnect that was going on yesterday. You know, Greta's speech, she was so angry. She was visibly shaking. You know, sitting in the press room watching her, everyone was completely silent. Like, it was a really moving speech. And yet people on the floor were clapping and cheering when she would say stuff like, you know, "We're watching you. We're holding you accountable. I know you're not evil. I know you don't want to steal my future." And that was directed, that was directly at world leaders. And yet they were sort of applauding her, congratulating her for being there and saying, "Good job." And I think from Greta's point of view, and she didn't smile at the end of her speech. She took a very sort of harsh tone, and I think that was to show, like, I'm not your climate mascot. I'm here to demand real action, and the youth are going to keep organizing around this and escalating their efforts if they don't see movement on this. And that was also noted by Emily Atkins. I don't know if you've heard of her heated email that she has started sending out, but she noted that on Sunday night, Just after the weekend youth climate summit that was organized by the UN for youth leaders to get a chance to speak with UN leaders, there was a oil and gas industry organized invitation-only event that a special envoy to the UN went and spoke at and congratulated oil leaders for, you know, making oil and gas leaders for making good progress and to, you know, ask them to keep at it and keep moving forward. So, and actually some youth crashed that event, and you can read about it in her newsletter, which is excellent. But yeah, the youth are essentially, they're not having it. And I think that was clear from Greta's speech yesterday.
And to add to that, a UN report was released on Saturday saying that the group of 20 countries responsible for 80% of global emissions are falling short of meeting even their modest climate pledges under the Paris Agreement. So what are you hearing from youth in response to how the biggest emitters are not really taking action, Paola? How are the youth responding to that?
Definitely. They're definitely fed up. Going off on Molly's last point, one of the events I attended on Saturday for the Youth Climate Summit, there was kind of a mini stage in protest where one of the, during a town hall with world leaders, one of the young activists from New York City essentially called out, you know, representatives of the UN because they were going to have an event immediately after on Sunday, 2 days. Basically, she was saying that Saturday's whole ordeal seemed like a photo op, and then all of them broke out in song. So it was a very powerful moment. People are younger, specifically, are fed up with adults making these decisions that are going to be a huge consequence to younger people. The entire day yesterday seemed like a very stark contrast to what we started on such a high with Greta's speech, and yet the day the plans kind of unveiled, it kind of like slowed down because it wasn't solutions weren't like met.
And sorry about that. We're going to try to get a better line from Paola. We're speaking with Paola Rosa Aquino, Senior Environmental Justice Fellow at GRIST. Molly Enkeen is a news fellow at GRIST, and you can find pieces that they've written about the climate strikes and the climate crisis in general at yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about a number of things that have happened over the past week. We've seen millions of young climate crisis activists and their supporters from around the globe take to the streets and the halls of power to demand real action. Last week, a number of youth actually testified on Capitol Hill, urging politicians in Washington to take action. And in many cases, the youth were really educating these politicians, while some Republicans were really talking about their love of capitalism and not really engaging with the youth. And then on Friday, we saw the global climate strike, the biggest single day climate protest in history. Over 4 million people took to the streets. On Saturday, youth leaders convened at the UN for the Youth Climate Summit. And yesterday, world leaders were criticized, especially from India, China, and the United States, for not taking action on this crucial issue. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you could take part in the conversation on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone. You can send us an email to yourcall@klw.org. You may go to our website, yourcallradio.org. If you would like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. Youth response to the climate change conference at the United Nations is also the topic for 1A coming up at 11 o'clock right after Your Call.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we continue our coverage of the climate crisis by talking about this year's 9th annual San Francisco Green Film Festival. We'll speak with Peter Nelson, whose film The Pollinators explores threats to honeybees. And we'll speak with Chris Beaver, whose film Once Was Water tells the story of how Las Vegas, one of the driest cities in the country, is actually a leader in sustainable water conservation. So we'll talk about films focusing on solutions and environmental justice. And you can find our past shows. Last week, we did a full week on the climate crisis at yourcallradio.org. You can also download our podcast there. And if you have feedback for us or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we are talking about the climate strikes. We're talking about the UN Youth Climate Summit and yesterday's Climate Action Summit in New York. Molly Enking is a news fellow at Grist. They do an incredible job of covering these issues. Paolo Rosa Aquino is a senior environmental justice fellow at Grist. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. What are your thoughts about all of the actions that we're seeing on the streets? 866-798-8255. And at the same time, while we on a regular basis, we're learning more about the science. We're getting more reports. There's so much action on the streets. And the United States, under this administration, is actually taking us backwards. And then you have India and China not taking any action on this issue. And so we got 16 youth from 12 countries filing a campaign to petition the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child to hold the world's leading economic powers accountable for inaction on the climate crisis. What do you make of all of these events? 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. We talk often on this show about how the people and the countries that emit the least amount of greenhouse gas emissions are often affected the most. And you can say the same about various cities across the United States, especially when you're talking about indigenous peoples. And Molly, you attended a panel on deforestation, and the Minister of the Environment from Gabon said that there's a lot of frustration at the major polluting countries from the countries that are feeling the worst effects of climate change. Can you talk about what you heard at that panel? What really stood out for you?
Yeah, so that was definitely a surprising moment for me yesterday, just how I think that frustrations were running high overall as the day wore on. And, you know, the Secretary General in his opening remarks had said, we didn't come here for pretty speeches. We came here for concrete plans. And throughout the day, it was becoming more and more clear that the concrete plans were coming from the countries, the smallest countries who have the most at risk in the climate crisis. And so the panel was on deforestation. We had been talking about that more generally. And then, the environmental minister from Gabon, I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but I was a little surprised that he just said, you know, frankly, some of us smaller countries are frustrated that, you know, we can do everything we can do, but it's not going to make enough an impact without Western countries and economic leaders making a bigger effort. So I did think that it was surprising that he made such a strong statement in the press conference.
And how did others respond? I mean, can you give us a sense of what happens at these events? So if you have the Minister of the Environment from Gabon attending a panel on deforestation, who else is there at these particular panels? Is it a mix between the largest emitters and the ones that don't? Or can you just describe that for us?
Yeah, and that's a good point. No, so it was a panel on deforestation with Costa Rica, I believe Sierra Leone, and Gabon. And so a lot of these pressers, throughout the day, there weren't that many of, like, the big world leaders at these sort of press briefing / panels. Just to give a brief overview, throughout the day, there's the speeches going on in the General Assembly Hall, and then there are also press briefings happening in another part of the UN on specific topics. So they'll do a panel-like exchange for about 30 minutes and then open it up for questions from the press. And so this was one of those. And throughout the day, there were several of these press briefings, but none of the major countries stopped by.
And is that usually the case, that none of the major countries attend these events?
You know, I'm not sure. I think that if they had something good to announce, they would have.
Right. Paola, what about you? What was your experience when you're hearing from places like Gabon, the places that emit the least mm-hmm. and are affected mm-hmm. in some cases the most?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a colleague of mine was at a press event about Barbados, and he also talked about how, you know, islands in the Caribbean that just got struck with Hurricane Dorian, a lot of them they're not the biggest emitters. I also attended a panel on small islands and least developed countries, and unless you experience this kind of devastation that they experience, it's hard for others to understand how destructive climate change is to these communities and these least developed countries. And, you know, the world is simply not registering that climate change is different for them, it seems.
What were people saying? Let's talk about specific tragedies that have happened just in the last few weeks. What were mm-hmm. people there saying about Hurricane Dorian in the Bahamas? We had on a reporter, David Smith from The Guardian, who talked about Abaco and how there's massive inequality there, because you have people with their second or third homes and mostly Haitian immigrants who work the land. They take care of the people. You know, they make sure basically that the island functions, and it got hit so incredibly hard. I mean, it's not even, you can't even describe the destruction that happened there. And according to the latest numbers, the death toll remains at about 52, but 1,300 people are still missing. And so what were people saying about Hurricane Dorian? Molly, did you hear anyone talking about that?
My apologies, I was on mute. Yeah, I mean, I know that Guterres went to the Bahamas about a week before the climate summit and, you know, went on a tour, and he tweeted about and talked about the devastation there and talked about category hell, as people are talking about it. But in everything I attended yesterday, I actually didn't hear much talk of Hurricane Dorian at all. I don't know if, Paola, we split up the event.
Yeah, I'll back up that. I also did not hear any mention. I've heard mention of other kind of very specific climate events, such as Lake Chad, Lake Chad essentially vanishing. But there was really no mention of Hurricane Dorian, interestingly.
Wow. What about the fires in the Amazon? What were people saying about those?
Right. There was discussion on that, and actually today, Jair Bolsonaro took the stage in front of the UN and kind of made some comments about indigenous leaders. I spoke with an indigenous leader from Panama, but he did comment a little bit about Bolsonaro's treatment of indigenous people in Brazil, it's a disaster. It's, you know, as people often quote, it's the lungs of the earth that are being torn down. So it's definitely something that's in the radar of people at the UN here.
Yeah, just yesterday, Greenpeace tweeted that Greenpeace climbers dropped giant wildfire banners over Burger King's flagship restaurant in London. They say the Amazon is still on fire and Burger King is still buying meat and animal feed from the companies responsible for the crisis. And you can find more information about that online. And we did a show about JBS, which is one of the largest meat producers in the world, and they are located in Brazil. That is Paola Rosa Aquino. She's a senior environmental justice fellow at GRIST. They do an incredible job of covering these issues. Molly Enking is a news fellow at GRIST. And today we're talking about the massive climate strikes that we saw on Friday, and we're talking about the UN Climate Summit. And if you have a question or a comment about the crisis and just what we're seeing on the streets and in action in the halls of power, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Molly, I understand that you went inside an installation at the UN which shows what air quality is like in different cities. And last week, we spoke with journalist Beth Gardner about her book, Choked, and it's just about how 9 million people prematurely die from air pollution every year. What was that installation like?
The installation was actually one of the coolest things I saw at the UN yesterday. It was by a artist named Michael Pinsky, and it looked like igloos from far away. When you got up closer, it was six geometric domes, and in each they had simulated what the air quality was like in different cities around the world, including smells. So you started in, and in each also there was a screen showing what the best days and the worst days are like, just with different charts and numbers. And it was really, really interesting. So you start in Norway, and the air was very clear, and it smelled slightly of pine. And then you move into London, and there's not too much pollution, but it noted on the screen there that a lot of the air pollution in London is from diesel, so it's harder to see, but there definitely was a distinctive smell. And then from London, you went into New Delhi, and the difference was shocking. It was hot. It was really hot. The air was very close. It was almost like being in a dirty steam room. So I think that this has been, for me at least, as a climate reporter, one of the most visceral demonstrations I've seen of the impacts of air quality, which is can sometimes be hard to conceptualize for people.
Hmm. Anything else stood out for you, Paula? Any installations or anything that activists were doing there that stood out for you?
Sure. I think on Saturday at the UN Youth Summit, there were actually protesters outside, Extinction Rebellion protesters, right outside of the UN, which was interesting. And also, I'll say, kind of like going off on my earlier in my piece, there were protesters in the building at the Youth Summit per se. Sustain US, a delegation in New York, they basically called out people during like one-on-one sessions with world leaders and, you know, called them out, especially mentioning the fact that people, that UN was meeting up with fossil fuel industry on Sunday, like 2 days. Basically, they were saying it seemed like a photo op. So I found it really interesting that there's still the youth, even though the youth summit was happening, youth were still in command and like saying what they wanted.
Hmm. Well, can you talk also about indigenous activists? Because these climate summits have been going on for a long time, and indigenous activists are always there raising hell. They're in the rooms. They travel from all over the world. And so I want to make sure that we also talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were at the event lots of indigenous activists, and they're a huge part of the conversation. They need to be at the table, really, because they're some of the most vulnerable communities to climate change, especially considering we were just talking about the fires in the Amazon. A lot of indigenous communities are being affected by these fires. So they really need to be able to, we need to be able to hear their voices in these kinds of conversations, because they are ones that are very directly impacted.
Paola Rosa Aquino is Senior Environmental Justice Fellow at GRIST, and Molly N. King is a News Fellow at GRIST. And today we're talking about the climate strikes, the UN Youth Climate Summit. We're talking about the Climate Action Summit, and then we're also going to talk about the petition that was filed by 16 youth from 12 countries. We are getting a bunch of emails from kind of angry listeners who say that I'm mispronouncing Greta's name. Now, I heard her on Democracy Now! Say that the correct pronunciation of her last name is actually Thunberry, not Thunberg or Thunberg. Molly or Paula? That's what I heard on Democracy Now! Last week. So that's why I say Thunberry, because that's what Greta said is the correct pronunciation of her name.
Sure. I'll admit that I'm not really aware of how exactly she pronounces her name.
Okay, well, I'll repeat what she said on Democracy Now! She said the correct pronunciation is Thunberry. And we'll put a link to that at yourcallradio.org. Yeah. So I'm just repeating her. Yeah, I would trust Greta on that. But she said a lot of people are getting it wrong. So let's talk about the petition that was filed by 16 youth from 12 countries. This is a campaign to petition the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child to hold the world's leading economic powers accountable for inaction on the climate crisis. And these countries are Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, and Turkey. The youth say that the United States is missing because every country except for the United States has ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. And of those countries, 45 agreed to an additional protocol that allows children to petition the UN about treaty violations. And they say that these five countries are violating the treaty because they're pumping out some of the most pollution that causes climate change. Molly, tell us about this petition and just how important this is.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you noted why a lot of people have been asking why they didn't include the United States. And I would just also note that there's already a lawsuit happening in the United States, Giuliana versus the United States. So that could have been part of designing the lawsuit as well. But yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to what I was saying before about how, like, Greta came to the United Nations with her game face on yesterday. She delivered an impassioned speech and then about an hour later announced this lawsuit. So while it may have seemed like she was, you know, well, it may have seemed to some like she was cooperating and, you know, coming to speak at the UN, she really was, like, making a very bold case and just reminding people that just because she's here doesn't mean she's on their team and that they're going to go after climate solutions no matter what. And I do think it's an interesting and good tactic to specifically go after the Convention on the Rights of the Child because this is one that, as you had mentioned before, these countries that they chose to sue can actually be held accountable in this court.
Paola, what would you add about the significance of this petition?
Yeah, I'll add that I spoke with a colleague from another publication yesterday who was interviewing one of the activists named in the lawsuit, Alexander Villasenor, and he basically told me that during the interview she just suddenly burst out crying. Like, I don't think she'd realized the full scope of how big of a deal it is that these countries are that these children are suing five countries for deeming what they've done as the climate crisis, as a children's rights crisis.
Well, the photos of these youth, along with quotes from them and where they're from, is on their website. It's childrenvsclimatecrisis.org. So it's childrenversusclimatecrisis.org. And you have, for example, Carlos Manuel from Palau saying, "We all have the right to enjoy our planet and we should all protect that right. Our generation is trying to prevent climate change for future generations." Ranton Anjine, sorry if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, from the Marshall Islands, "I don't want to be underwater. I want future generations to experience what I experience. I want them to experience living on iBay. It still saddens me. I want them to experience the same things I did." So you've got the Marshall Islands, India, South Africa, Nigeria, Tunisia, France, Germany, Sweden, the United States, Brazil, and Argentina. You know, the other thing that is really incredible about what has been happening is the solidarity and the connections made between youth from different parts of the world. For example, I'd love to know the backstory about how these youth came together. Do you have any idea how that happened, Molly?
Well, I know that Alexander Villasenor has, as I said, sort of been considered the, like, state's parallel to Greta in terms of organizing and striking outside the UN for about a year now. And obviously they organized the climate strike on Friday together. So But I don't know exactly how they were connected. And I just think that, it's, as you were saying, highlighting the stories from the other youth activists is definitely something that's not happening enough and needs to happen because they are just heartbreaking. And another thing that sort of, when you were saying that, I thought of is actually Emma Gonzalez tweeted at Greta today and mentioned that, you know, she'd be interested in meeting and working together. So that could be potentially like youth activists from the gun movement and youth activists from the climate movement coming together to do some sort of demonstration, which could be really powerful.
Wow, that would be really powerful. Mm-hmm. Paola, you actually wrote a piece with your colleague Rachel Ramirez called Meet the Other Greta Thunbergs at the first ever UN Youth Climate Summit. And you wrote about 16-year-old Manal Badar, a climate activist from Morocco who said she's been fighting for the climate since she was little. In 2016, she organized her first ever climate strike, but neither the media nor Moroccan leaders paid any attention to her. And now she's working with other Moroccan youth organizing climate strikes and leading recycling workshops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, my colleague Rachel spoke with her. But from what I heard from Rachel, she was a very powerful speaker. And she's been a huge voice in her area. And yet, also, like Molly mentioned, there's so many people, so many kids doing this work, and often they can be overshadowed by people like, you know, I'm guessing that Greta Thunberg, like, she knows other, but perhaps other people don't know. The media doesn't really spotlight them, which is a shame.
You mentioned earlier the emotional toll that this is taking on the youth and how one young person was crying when this lawsuit or this petition was announced. And I just want to play a clip. This happened last week. Young climate activists testified on Capitol Hill. And Jamie Margolin, an activist from Seattle, was asked to talk about how this is affecting her emotionally. And here's how she answered.
Like underlying issues of like anxiety, and it's just really hard to grow up in a world full of ifs. You know, I don't think a lot of people in Congress understand the conversations that are happening in everyday American high schools, but we're constantly asked, prepare for your future, study for your future, do this for your future. But our world is full of ifs. I'll be talking to my best friend and she'll be like, yeah, you know, I really want to see this natural place sometime if it's going to still be around. I really want to study to be this if that's still going to be a possibility. And it's just like this constant looming uncertainty. And it's this weird form of nihilism and weird just fear that's been existing in my generation, where kids are joking like, what is even like the point? The world is ending. What are we studying for? What are we doing? And it's this kind of depression. It's this fear that is not just among me or my panelists here, but everyone. And that anxiety is something that no child should ever have to fear. Because if you think about it, if you go back to what is the purpose of a parent, down to just the biological purpose, it's to give their child the best future and the best life that they can possibly have. And the supposed American dream is to make sure that children have a better future than the adults. But right now, it's like some members of government and some corporations are actively pointing a gun to children's futures and actively making it worse, actively going out of their way to support corporations and poison us and destroy our future. And that is horrifying, and it feels like a betrayal. It's like a knife to the heart to know that people who have kids, they'll go around in these campaign ads and they'll be like holding these babies like, oh, you should vote for me, look at me interacting with this small child, while they actively poison and choose their wallets over their children. So it's very devastating and scary, but it's also, it feels like we've been betrayed.
That is Jamie Margolin, an activist from Seattle, who testified on Capitol Hill last week in front of politicians. She was asked to talk about how all of this is affecting her emotionally. I think that's really important, Molly, as we're all cheering and we're so happy that so many people are out on the streets. But for 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 18-year-olds, I mean, this is a lot to put on someone who's young. So can you talk about what you have heard from other youth, especially on this issue, how it's affecting them emotionally?
Absolutely. I did a piece on a actually poetry performance that the Climate Museum here in New York City put together back in June. And they had youth from all over the five boroughs. I think maybe there were 11 of them who all actually performed at the Apollo Theater their poems about climate change. And just going to their rehearsal and hearing their poems was heartbreaking. One of the young men who I spoke to, his poem was about how all he's ever wanted in life was to grow up and be a dad. And his poem was kind of an ode to a daughter that he doesn't know if he'll ever have, because he's not sure the world is going to be a good enough place for her. And so, you know, his poem starts out talking about the daughter that he can't wait to have, and at the end of the poem he says, maybe I won't have a daughter. And that, to me, is the most obvious exhibition of how a lot of these children, really they are children, feel like they just aren't going to have a future, and they're not going to get to buy into that American dream that Jamie was talking about.
Wow. Well, we have a comment online from Jennifer who says, Indigenous communities have been pushing for climate justice for time immemorial. They've not only been on the front lines, they have been tireless in their protection of the sacred system of life that we all depend upon for clean air, water, and soil. Thank you for that comment. And thank you both so much for joining us. Molly Enking is a news fellow at GRIST. This is an incredible website that covers these issues. And Paola Rosa Aquino is a senior environmental justice fellow at GRIST. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. And you can find stories that we mentioned today if you want to learn more about this petition that was filed by 16 youth from 12 countries. You can see photos of the youth, and you can also find out where they're from and why they decided to get involved. They are petitioning the UN Committee on the Rights of the Child to hold the world's leading economic powers accountable for inaction on the climate crisis. And the five countries are Argentina, Brazil, France, Germany, and Turkey. None of these countries is on a path needed to keep the planet from heating to 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius. The United States is missing from that list because the U.S. has not ratified the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. Every other country has, except the United States. Thanks to Leah Cesarin for producing today's show, and Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. And I hope you can join us for tomorrow's show. We will be speaking about this year's 9th annual San Francisco Green Film Fest. We'll speak with Peter Nelson, whose film The Pollinators explores threats to honeybees, and Chris Beaver. His film Once Was Water tells the story of how Las Vegas, one of the driest cities in the country, is becoming a leader in sustainable water conservation. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.